Welcome to the Magic Potion Podcast, where a sprinkle and a dash can enhance your class. Listen to learn about tools, techniques, and stories from educators on ways to improve your lessons, create a positive culture, and much more. I'm your host, Kevin Reinemann, and now it's time to make it happen. Hello and welcome to episode 32 with my special guest, Rushton Hurley. I'm pleased to have Rushton here today. Could you please tell the audience who you are and what your background in education is, please?
Absolutely, Kevin. So totally jazzed to be here. Thanks for having me on. My name is Rushton. I am a former high school teacher of Japanese language, and then I became a principal of a K-12 and then an online high school. And then in 2005, I started Next Vista for Learning, which is mainly an online library, free to use, free to contribute to, free to download from, of videos by and for teachers and students everywhere. So the idea is to help people all over the world through just free stuff, creative insights on learning and teaching.
Yes, and I love that. It we'll talk a little bit about it later, but you'll definitely want to check that out. You know, you can go ahead and look at it now while you're listening to this episode. There's nothing wrong with doing that.
Absolutely. That's nextvista.org, nextvista.org. Shameless plug. Thank you very much.
And you've written before, right?
I have. I've written a couple of books. The first one was called Making Your School Something Special. And that's about fostering and sharing stories of success. So in schools all over the place, you know, they have these great things happen in classrooms, and those things don't make it out to become discussions for PD or part of the PR effort of the school way too often, right? Like that, it just remains too quiet. We're not good about telling our stories. And so yes. I decided helping people learn to ramp up learning activities so that they become those stories, develop their confidence, run kind of your team in a way that allows tapping into those stories for all kind of benefits of the school. And the second book I wrote, it's called Making Your Teaching Something Special. I wrote that because I figured out after the first book that loads of people hadn't developed the confidence in what they were doing in the classroom to see themselves as people who contribute to making the school something special in the community. And so I thought, okay, well, if I could come up with some pieces of advice, I should probably write a book. And when my list got to 50, I was like, all right. You know, and so what I did was I wrote these very short chapters, like 2 to 3 pages, and divided into 5 areas. And the areas are rapport with students, assessments and assignments, delivery, collegiality and professionalism, and logistics. And so the idea is that a teacher could read, you know, one of those chapters, you know, while eating lunch and then try it out in the afternoon, right? That kind of thing. And so it's gotten some good love out there. And I'm glad that it's out there helping people. You know, it has like little discussion questions and things like that for when people are, you know, doing little book studies. And if anybody contacts me and says, hey, you know, heard you on Kevin's podcast, you know, and we're doing a little book study, you know, could you connect with us? I'll video chat with you, you know, no charge. I mean, happy to do that kind of thing.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for doing stuff that. That's how we make the world a better place, one school at a time.
Amen.
So in your mind, when you're talking about teachers, I mean, you've toured the country, going to conferences and done great things in education. In your experience, what makes a successful educator?
All right. Well, let's see. The list is a long one, right? But probably starts with understanding that it is about the learning, not the teaching. All right. So clearly the two are related. But on the other hand, we're so into what we do often in the classroom that we kind of get our heads away from that important piece of, well, are they learning or not? You know, because if I've taught it, that doesn't mean squat if they haven't learned it, right? So that's why I figure starting a book on teaching with rapport is a big deal, right? How do you become the kind of teacher that a student comes in, sits down, and says, all right, you know, I'm curious what's about to happen. So what do you do to make those things happen? How do you begin to vary what you do in terms of presentation so that, you know, they're not moving into, you know, to low gear as soon as you start talking? So I would say that a lot of the main things are, you know, focus on the students, not you. You know, just smile more is probably a big thing. Be organized. That's a critical thing for any teacher. if what we do is we're trying to get ready for the classes for the next day, we're not getting the time we need to be a little more creative. You know, we need to kind of have things set so that plan is in our mind, and as we think ahead of time about what happens in that class and what different students might need, we've got time to be creative. Oh, you know, I could add this for this kid. You know, those kinds of moments are really important for teachers. So being organized gets you into that space. And in terms of creativity, probably a really important thing for any teacher is to understand that creativity is not something you either have or don't have. It's something you either work with or don't, right? I think Maya Angelou put it this way, right? It's an unlimited resource, creativity. The more you use, the more you have. And of course, she knew what she was talking about on that front, right? So I think that for a lot of teachers, just getting into that space of being a little more organized, focusing on the kids, and understanding that you have like a wellspring of creativity within you to tap, I think those are the kinds of things that can allow teachers to really ramp up their game quickly.
Awesome. Well, what you kind of hit on there, as we're recording this episode, we're at the National Catholic Educational Association Conference in Chicago, Illinois. Mm. And as you're talking about rapport with students and focusing on the learning, there seems to be an overarching theme here at this conference that relationships are key.
Yeah.
There was a keynote speaker yesterday that was talking about how our relationship with God is important, as well as with our students and our relationship with our peers and everything. That's really, I think, what I'm taking away from this conference so far. I still got another day and a half to go or so, but thanks, you helped that out there.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like if relationships are in a good place, you know, a lot follows from that. I actually have a book that's being considered by NCEA for publishing right now. This would be my third book. yet another shameless plug, right? But the working title is Technology, Teamwork, and Excellence. And it's about how to develop good relationships on the team. You know, like you mentioned that before, right? Relationship with God, relationship with students, relationship with peers. So when we think about relationship with peers, we're often in that space of, you know, do we get along with people we work with? But that is, you know, that's like level 1 out of 20, right? What we want to do is we want to develop that sense of, am I connecting with peers in different places? Do I understand that there are teachers in the Philippines in schools who are my peers? These are people that I can learn from, who have created things that I can use with my students, that I can create things that they can use with their students, that we have an unprecedented opportunity in the world as it is today to share all kinds of cool resources with each other. I mean, like, there is no excuse for reinventing the wheel now, right?
Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of leads me jump around a little bit here on what we had talked about doing, but I sat in on one of your sessions at FETC, Future of Education Technology Conference, this past January, and you were talking about much better staff in team meetings.
Yeah, I'm real proud of that title.
And I love that session. I took a lot away from it. I took a ton of notes, and I shared it with my building principals, and I think I can see great things happening, but that's the same type of thing you're talking about with,
yeah.
You know, we should be collaborating. And I believe in your session, you talk a little bit about how teachers need time to see their peers in their classrooms.
Yeah.
Getting the chance to see the best practices that are working, because a lot of times teachers don't have the time. They don't get the opportunity, I should say, to talk to each other about what works and what hasn't worked in their classroom.
Totally true. I mean, you know, like getting together with people and talking about what hasn't worked is actually kind of a tricky thing for us, right? You know, we feel like if we haven't done everything perfectly, we're somehow like falling short as
right.
a teacher, which I believe the Gospels have plenty to say about that particular perspective, right? But when we look at this and we stop and we say, all right, you know, something like team meetings. This is actually kind of a perfect analogy, as I see it, to a lot of classes. When we have a meeting, are we just checking off the box that we had a meeting?
Right.
See, we had a meeting, right? That's an opportunity lost, right? What we want to do is we want to inspire people in that meeting. We want people to walk away from a meeting feeling like, oh, I've got ideas that I didn't have before. I see possibilities that I didn't see before. We've talked about things that have me excited about what's possible for this kid that's been driving me nuts all year. You know, those kinds of things are how we should see every interaction we have professionally. do we take something away that allows a kid to see a new avenue for him or herself? And if you look at classes, same kind of thing. Did I simply teach the class? Did I check off the box that I taught the class? Did I check off the box that I taught something, as opposed to what we were talking about earlier, which is, did they learn? Did they get excited about something that that they haven't seen kind of in themselves before? Are they making connections? You know, because it's not just about, you know, did you memorize something? It's do you have the content down, and can you draw connections in ways that allow you to see yourself as a creative person with all sorts of possibilities for the future? I see that as part of the goal in both the classroom and in a staff meeting. We want people in that space where they say, I can do more than I knew I could.
As you're talking about this, in my head, I don't know where it's coming from, but I'm picturing a beach. Uh-huh. So if we're doing things, faculty meetings, the way you're talking, staff meetings, everything, I'm picturing waves. You know, they're coming up, they're cresting, and then they're coming down.
Yeah.
And then that next meeting should be bringing us back up.
Yeah.
A lot of times, it's more of the tide pulling away. And there it all goes. It's all out the door. So
the sorry truth is that some meetings are more counterproductive in terms of,
yes.
of building, you know, in a sense of some of our people, you know, kind of a jaded, you know, kind of mentality about what we're doing.
Oh, man, here I go. I have to go.
We talked about this last year, blah, blah, blah. You know, that kind of thing. As opposed to, you know, what are the stories? You know, when Jesus taught, it was stories.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I mean, like, I'm saying nothing profound here, right? And we have so many stories available to us, right? When I talk about digital video, what I'm talking about is the opportunity to share a story in an interesting way, whether that's a story of learning, you know, a story of insight, a story of personal connection. And, you know, there's a video on our site called My Name is Michael, for example.
Okay.
And it's a kid who's in, I think he was in 7th, 8th grade at the time, and he's autistic, you know, and he tells the story of what it's like to be him as someone who has autism. And he actually didn't really understand those things before, right? So he had been in a class where they'd said, we want you to make a video about how you see the world. And he goes home and he talks to his mom and he says, you know, I'm supposed to make this video and about how I see the world. And I know I see the world differently from everybody else, but I don't know why. And she decides at that point, you know, it's time to tell him. It's time to tell him. And she explains to him about autism. So suddenly he has a framework for this.
So he didn't
thing.
Know before
he,
this?
He didn't really know, right?
Gotcha.
And so he makes this beautiful video kind of explaining how he sees the world and the challenges he faces and his hopes. And that's one of those things, you know, you watch a story like that from the mouth of the kid himself, right?
Living it.
You know, that we could stand up in a meeting and talk about, well, you know, I mean, you know, students who are on the spectrum, you know, need more blah blah blah. And you know, and that's not a bad thing to talk
no.
about. But if you hear a kid explaining it in his own words in a video, right? 3 minutes, boom. Whew, that's a totally different thing. We need those kinds of moments where the stories themselves inspire us to be better at what we do because we better understand what we do. And I think that, you know, one of the mistakes we make is that we get into a rut where we think we know what's going on, you know, across the breadth of the classroom. And that's just not the world, right? It's not us showing the humility that says there are kids in here thinking things and experiencing things that I have no idea. None, right? And until I'm kind of open with both my ears and my heart, I'm not going to know, and I won't be able to be the kind of teacher that kid needs me to be. So when we think about, you know, the role of stories, I think we have to be in that space where we say we need to share our stories, the things that work well in the classroom, the things that don't, right? I mean, you can imagine a conversation between two teachers where, hey, I tried this in the classroom today, but it totally bombed. Oh, really? Wow, you know? Yeah, but then I asked the kids what they thought, and this one kid had this amazing suggestion. See, you know, that's a good conversation,
yeah.
Right? You know, that's the kind of thing we need to do.
And that kind of lends itself to the practice of always reflecting on your lessons.
Yeah.
You know, we should be assessing ourselves as well as we're assessing the students.
Yes.
Look back, reflect, and make those changes. This time of year, yeah. It is so easy to just start going through the motions. You know, if you're elementary, you're probably going through testing season right now, which is brutal.
Mm.
So good luck and God bless you That's on right. that.
Prayers going out.
But it's almost over. You know, there's that light at the end of the tunnel there. But you have to finish strong at the same time. So I believe the session you're doing a little bit later today is about preparing a staff for a major change, which is probably a hot topic this time of year if you're looking at going into a one-to-one or maybe having a, like at my school, we're going to have a major change in administration with a new new
head of school.
Yes, that's right. It was superintendent, but now we're changing the title to head of school.
All right.
That's right. So, I mean, there's a major change that I'm going to be having. And I can tell you from my experience, I'm finishing up year 11. This new guy will be my seventh boss over those years.
Wow.
And every single one of them has been a different management style.
Yeah.
So that can be, I don't want to say hard to overcome, but it's a change that you have to get ready for. So what kind of advice are you going to be sharing in that conversation?
So when we think about major change, right, you know, we're often, interestingly, I'd say, and naturally, we're often too focused on the content of the change. So, you know, going one-to-one, going, you know, going Google Apps, where everything's far more collaborative than it's been before, right? Changing a schedule that's been in place for a long time. You know, adding a new building, right? Certainly new leadership. I mean, all of these things are big changes where what I see in this is the opportunity to build a team as a part of exploring a change. Now, I should note, I'm talking about proposed change and not imposed change, right? You know, it's a whole different set of problems when someone is essentially so far away from proper humility that they say, this is what the school needs, this is what we're doing, everybody will come along or hit the road. Now, I mean, I can imagine things that are probably pretty good guesses on that front, right? You know, like we need to be positive in front of the kids. I'm there, right? But too often, you know, we're not in that space of saying, hey, this is the idea. Here's what we want to move forward with. How do we build ourselves, you know, so that we explore that right? And I think that if you explore change well, then at the end of it, whether or not, which is redundant, whether you adopted the change, you've built the team. You know, like the team is stronger because the kind of communication they've done and exploring the change has been something that has helped them. That they've seen each other in a new professional light. They've had a chance to share ideas in ways that teach them that other people are listening. You know, you can imagine as a school leader anticipating problems with a particular change and having a teacher come up and say, you know, I'm just really worried about this. But maybe the teacher can't really articulate what the issue is. If as a leader you can say, well, tell me, is it that? And you've thought through the, you know, kind of the possible objections to the change, you know. That teacher may be really excited that you've just been heard, right? Yes, that's what I'm worried about. Well, here's what I'm thinking on those lines, and let's see what we can come up with together, right? This is not rocket science. It's really just a matter of listening, and listening a lot. I think that when we put things out there and we give people the chance to respond, especially if they have this chance to respond in a way that's crafted, right? So if you're in a team meeting talking about things, I mean, a good brainstorming session is a good thing. But on the other hand, people may not be able to speak up at a time when a bunch of people are talking about something, and they may need to write it out in a way that can be considered. You know, there are all kinds of great tools out there for this now. You know, collaborative docs, you know, and you know where what people do is they build their ideas. You know, so that you don't end up with two people, you know, or two different sides where they're both saying research says, you know, or something fairly useless like that, right? You know, it's like, well, which research under what conditions, and was it well gathered, and does it apply to us, and how do we know? You know, I mean, like there's all kinds of things that I think good communication can handle as you look at something that's far bigger.
I love it. I'm at lunch yesterday. I was having a conversation with a couple folks, John Meehan and his principal.
Yeah.
You'll have to pardon me. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But one of the things we were talking about was this, you know, with Catholic identity or whatever your school mission is. If you're not a private school, if you're not a Catholic school, wherever you're at, you have a school mission. So we're looking at it from the angle of, athletic teams and extracurricular events. And I haven't done this myself, but if you sit back and think about it, our students are spending more time with those coaches, with those band directors, with those musical directors, than they are their teachers. So it's so critical that all those extracurriculars are tied together with the school's mission. It's not unheard of to think maybe a coach is going to be with, you know, a 20-person baseball team for upwards of, you know, 20, 25 hours in 1 week compared to the teacher that's having them for five. So, and the students, just like you were saying with the teachers and that collaboration and working on a committee and stuff, they're working through adversity together. They're building that camaraderie and building rapport with each other. So it's kind of neat to see it both from the student perspective and think about it from your teachers working in that setting as well as a team.
I think a key word you use there is together, right?
Yes.
So the coaches and the players are experiencing something together.
Yes.
So the coach helps the players develop their ability to play the game. Yes. Right? But then they all experience something together. Often what happens in a classroom is a teacher teaches something, but they may not be experiencing something together. This is where active learning becomes so important. What is it that you're doing in your classroom that kids will remember and talk about in 20 years, right? What is that? What is that thing that they'll be, hey, you remember back in, you know, like Ms. Redmond's classroom, blah, 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 you know, or something like that. And I think that's a perfectly legitimate question. I mean, are we supposed to simply be people that help shuffle papers, right, and show that they, you know, that they passed these tests, right? I mean, like, I think we're called to be a lot more than that.
Yeah.
I think we're called to figure out whatever it takes to give these kids memorable learning experiences, powerfully memorable learning experiences, where what they do is they say, wow, I had no idea. I'd never seen the world that way. I didn't know that other people were like that. And you know, and it's not as if that's a matter of you know, like writing up a dissertation. What we're talking about is saying we're going to do something a little bit different. Maybe I'm going to start the class a little differently today. Maybe I'm going to show a story and we're going to talk about it in ways that we haven't talked about before. Maybe we're going to connect with the class in another part of the world, right? You know, maybe we're going to go to the trouble of going on a field trip. I know it's a pain, right, to go through all the paperwork to go to a field trip. I get that. But on the other hand, that's memorable.
Yeah.
You get, you know, you're essentially breaking a predictability that kids experience at school. And one of the things I talk about in a lot of sessions is I'll say, hey, if you're talking to any kid between 3rd and 12th grade, and you ask that kid in one word to describe school, what would that word be? Tell me. And every time, the vast majority of people in the room say, boring.
Yep.
And granted, you know, there's a reason I started third grade. You know, the younger kids, they're excited to be there. You know, they hug your leg, you know, whatever, right? But when we talk about this boring word, what fascinates me about it is that, yes, kids say it, and they don't mean it. They don't mean it. They like school. They like coming to school. They like being around their friends. They like being around caring, stable adults. Not everybody has that at home, right? And what their problem is that they have limited vocabularies.
Right. Right?
What they say boring. What they mean is predictable. They find school predictable. And when they walk into a class and nothing kind of jumps out at them, why should they be excited about
their
learning?
Right. It's the same old, same old.
Right. And we've just got so much at our fingertips now to be able to draw upon and to help them have experiences in the classroom that they've never had before. There's so much of that is available to us. I mean, and free stuff, right? I mean, we're talking about resources, you know, across the internet. Is there bad stuff on the internet? Sure.
Absolutely.
Right? But anything powerful can be used for good or ill. I mean, that's how that works, right? And consequently, if we are the kind of people who are constantly asking good questions, even if we don't know that much about technology, but we ask good questions, how might we use that? How else do people use that? You know, what are things that are connected to that? What are alternatives to that? You don't have to know squat about technology to ask those questions. So I think that, you know, as we get into that space of really asking ourselves, are we giving them experiences that they'll remember? We're putting ourselves in a good position to have better conversations about what may need to change, you know, when we look at what our school is, you know, how we communicate to our stakeholders about what we are, what we're trying to be, you know, all those kinds of things. It's a fascinating time to be able to do what we do because of what's available to us.
And I'm kind of taken away that the beauty of our education and our classrooms is going to come about when we start making things memorable, not memorized.
Right. Well, very well said. Very well said. I'm going to write that down. Right
if
now.
You can make that shift in your classroom, and I've been hearing a little bit of a buzzword going around lately to do experience planning as opposed to lesson planning. And I think that goes right in with your active learning about as well. And that's how we create those memories with those students. But I get it. It's tough. There's a lot of planning that has to be done. There's a lot of prep work every single time. But in the end, isn't it worth it?
it totally is, right? Because that's the thing. You know, we have a thing in our society that says, like work is somehow bad. Right? You know, hey, you're working hard or hardly working.
I have to go to work today.
Have to go to work. Exactly.
It's Monday.
Right? As opposed to the work I do is stuff that I love and I find meaningful and that is fascinating to me. I mean, who doesn't want to leave work at the end of the day feeling like, wow, that was really interesting? I mean, who, right? so consequently, I like that characterization of experience planning. Now, if what we're doing is saying, all right, I need to try out different things, I need to look at some different possibilities, that is work, yes, but the result of it is that we have the kind of experiences that validate who we are in our chosen profession. Okay, you know, when I teach and I've done something that the kids are excited about, that's pretty amazing. And you know, and a blessing, right? Because loads of people come home from work every day and never feel that way.
No.
And we have the chance every day to do something along those lines.
Oh, man, this is great. I'm really enjoying this conversation we have going on here. And I just had, like, a mini heart attack. I looked up at my clock on the computer here, but it's still in Eastern time. I was thinking we were behind schedule, and I was late for my next
90
session.
90 minutes into it. Fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, but that's okay. We're not at that time.
True.
That's an hour difference here.
Good man.
So, all right. Let's say you had 1.21 gigawatts with a DeLorean and a flux capacitor.
Excellent.
And you wanted to travel back in time and go speak to yourself walking in on your first day of school.
Yeah.
What advice, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself if you're starting your career over?
Be more humble. I was one fairly obnoxious, cocky kid coming into the classroom, and understanding that I needed to connect with more people outside of my immediate professional circle is something that I didn't quite get, right? So there was my department, and it was a nice group of people, right? I mean, nice group of people. We weren't really challenging each other to hit kind of new levels of professional possibility. There was also the group of Japanese language teachers in the area where I was teaching, perfectly nice people, but also, you know, kind of, they had kind of this hierarchy and it felt a little bit like they were checking off boxes as well with that. And what I really needed was to be around teachers who helped me understand that I am constantly learning, right? And that's the joy in what we do. And so, you know, it is great for the AP physics teacher and the kindergarten teacher to sit down together and share ideas. That's a healthy school where that happens, right? And knowing that, you know, you find people in different places, you know, how does that happen? Well, now it happens all sorts of ways, right? You know, like these conferences are awesome. But, you know, you look online and you find things like EdCamp. There's a lot of teachers never heard of EdCamp.
Right.
EdCamp.org, right? And what it is people get together and they hang out for, you know, some number of hours and share ideas, and it's awesome. And you're like, well, I don't know that it sounds it. Go and try it. Go and try it. Coffee EDU is like an even simpler version of that, right? Where somebody says, all right, so at, you know, the Starbucks on blah, 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 you know, we're going to meet at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning and at 9 o'clock, no matter how good the conversation is, we're going to cut it off, right? And so you just know what you're in for. But people, you know, people enjoy that time to just get together and share ideas. And the people who go to the trouble of going to such things are people that you're going to want to connect with, by and large, right? I think that kind of wealth of communications options that we have now means that we can really get into that space of saying, you know, who else is interested in kind of the intersection of history and sports or whatever it may be? You know, and they're out there, right? You know, whatever it is you can imagine, they're out there. And so having the chance to tap into the insights and experiences and stories of others is the kind of thing that can keep you energized as a teacher for years and years to come. And I wish I had better understood that when I started, but lucky for me, I met people who helped me understand it along the way.
And I'm thanking you for helping me understand it now.
Oh, well, I bow in your direction. All right. All good.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add that we missed out on?
Wow, let's see. I would say that in talking about communication and connecting with people, one of the things I would say is that I love connecting with people on ideas as well. And if you go to my nonprofit site, nextvista.org, and there, up in the right there's contact. Right, or nextvista.org/contact will do it as well. and you send me a note, I'm happy to be in touch with you. You know, you might say, hey, I want my kids making some videos to show their learning as in ways that will allow them to understand that what they put together can help kids in other places. I understand you do this like service video contest where you tell the stories of people in your community who make life better for others. I want my kids, you know, they're already doing a lot of service activities. I want them to make videos that tell those stories and have them celebrated somewhere. You know, I mean, like, you know, or you just might say, hey, you know, you said this thing in the podcast, you know, could I ask you more about it? Do it. I answer every email I get eventually.
Have to throw that one out there.
I think that's an important word to add for pure honesty on this front. Yeah.
And as I'm looking at his inbox pulled up over here, I don't see, I think it's pretty clear. He's answered all of them.
Well, that's one of those things. I actually write about this in the new book. What is it that motivates you to be organized, to get something done, right? And so for some people, it's a to-do list. For some people, it's a task list that looks a particular way on your phone. For me, I am hell-bent on getting stuff out of my inbox. But I am required to deal with it honorably, right? So if someone sent a question, I need to answer it, right? And so for me, there's kind of that thing of, if the inbox is overflowing, it's stressful, and I'm like, and so trying to just get a little bit done here, a little bit done there, and really thinking through like what is it that I need to give to that response or whatever, is something that tends to work pretty well for me.
Awesome. Now, if you mentioned nextvista.org/contact. What about if they want to get in touch with you on social media?
Okay, so I'm on Twitter. I wouldn't say that I spend tons of time there, and occasionally people will direct message me, and I'll figure it out like 2 months later. That's a bit of an oops, right? But I'm at Rushton, H, R-U-S-H-T-O-N-H. And like anything on Twitter, right? You know, if you see somebody having posted something you like, you know, click on their name, click on their handle, and just see what their other posts look like. And if you like those, then follow that person. If not, don't bother, right? Sometimes people are like, oh, Twitter is too much. You know, they talk about, like, I just ate this sandwich. It's like, that's your fault. Don't follow the person who said that, right? So on Instagram, I'm at Rushton Was Taken, as in somebody got there ahead of me. So R-U-S-H-T-O-N. W-A-S-T-A-K-E-N. And it's mostly travel photography, actually. I think the beauty of the world is something to celebrate and share. And I try to, when I post, it's been months, sorry. But when I post, the idea is to share a thought along with the picture that is kind of interesting to me in some way. And hopefully interesting to folks that go to the trouble of following me. So those two, I can't say I spend a lot of time on Facebook, but yeah, I mean, Instagram and Twitter, and by all means, you know, just do a contact on the site, and that'd be great.
Awesome. Well, always great running into you, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
An honor to talk to you, my friend.
Awesome. All right, listeners, you know what you got to do. Go out there and make it happen.
Thank you for listening to the Magic Potion Podcast. This podcast was created using Anchor FM. Please subscribe and leave comments with your thoughts and ideas from the classroom. Until next time, get out there and make it happen.